Welcome to Your Family Dog, a podcast dedicated to helping families love living with dogs. Here are your hosts, Julie Fudge-Smith and Colleen Pilar.
Hi, welcome to Your Family Dog. I'm Julie Fudge-Smith, and I'm here today with Colleen Pilar and Dr. Leanne Lilly, a veterinarian at The Ohio State University Veterinary Hospital, I believe. Anyway, she is a behavior expert. She's come today to talk to us about puppy developmental stages. And she has interesting history. She got her vet degree at the University of Wisconsin. Then she went to Colorado, where she did some general practice. And then went to the University of Pennsylvania to do some behavior work. And she's now in an internship at OSU, at The Ohio State University. You have to say The. She's in the second year of 3 years, and then that's followed by a very rigorous exam. And then she will be one of the few select board-certified veterinary animal behaviorists here in the United States. So thank you very much for joining us today, Dr. Lilly.
Well, thank you for having me.
So, puppy developmental stages, what do we need to know?
Well, you know, there are books about this, so we'll try and boil down into sort of the highlights about what do we need to know about puppies and why do we care about these specific stages and why does it matter? Because if it doesn't matter, then why would you need to know it? But I think it's important to sort of have a little brief overview, sort of a roadmap of where puppies come from. Okay, yes, I know mommy dog loves a daddy dog very much, and then puppies happen via stork. But a roadmap of where they're coming from and where they're going to is helpful so that when we talk about these things, that everybody knows what we mean and we're all saying the same things, but also so that people know kind of what the timeline looks like. So just like you know, any other mammal, there's a neonatal period, which is the time period between birth and sort of a big change in developmental stage. And for puppies, that's about 0 to 13 days. And puppies are born blind and deaf. They actually initially have really poor senses of smell, which I find hilarious given that we know dogs for their sense of smell.
Yeah.
But they operate initially mostly by pheromones and their mouths, which makes sense given the sorts of things that dogs like to do, right? They take in a whole bunch of information through their mouth. They lick it, they taste it, they chew on it. How hard is this? Is this edible? I don't know. Let me put it in my mouth. They're kind of like toddlers. Mm-hmm. So that's their very, very early period. That is followed by a transitional period, which is that 2 weeks to about just shy of 3 week period, so 14 to 20 days. This is when their eyes open, their teeth erupt, they become able to stand. So they start looking like actual beings instead of little sensory deprived aliens. This is also when they learn to avoid pain. And by this, I'm referring to studies that we would never do anymore that were done back in the 60s. This is the age at which if you put them on a shock floor wired with electric shock, they will say, oh, I'm not going back over there. Interestingly enough, they don't actually seem to have an emotional response to, oh, I'm not going back over there. That floor hurts my feet. So it's an interesting developmental time, but it's a sort of an emotionally blank developmental time for better or for worse. This phase ends when hearing begins. So the socialization period, which goes from 3 weeks of age to 12-ish weeks of age, is defined by when they start to show a startle response to sound. So that's that shoulders up, head down, slinky, elbows bent, wide-eyed, all of a sudden response that puppies show. I mean, it's very virtually the same startle response in any other species. We just look a little different depending on your shape. And that defines the start of this. And that's because you can't interpret the world that you cannot sense, right? So their eyes are open, their ears are open. By now they have a great sense of smell. So the world is available to them to decide how it operates.
Okay.
They go through weaning during this period. They begin to leave the nest to eliminate. So I don't want to live in my own excrement starts at 3 weeks of age. And we start to see play behaviors, which is one of the cutest things about puppies. This is when they start to decide, how does the universe work and how do I feel about it? So they're taking in all this information. They're taking in sights. They're taking in sounds. They're taking in textures. They're taking in tastes. And they're putting it all into three categories, right? So they put things into... This is an opportunity. This is good, right? Mom's breasts. Those are great. Those deliver food. We like those. Playing with my siblings. Well, that's fun. That's a good experience. Neutral experiences, so things that don't have any bearing on them, toasters, the sounds of doors, leaves falling, right? All those things that happen in the background on a day-to-day life that don't have any bearing on reality, they start to group them into that. And then threats or potential threats. So this is a time period where they do start to decide if things or situations or things that they perceive are potentially scary. And they don't do that before this. So in class, I often will joke that this is a time period where you don't want to drop a puppy on its head. It's probably not going to go as well. And I get to say that because I threw my own self and dropped myself on my head when I was younger, but I did it before my sensitive period. So it was okay. So
I'm so glad.
I know, right? Well, I turned out okay. Any of you with head injuries, it's possible to turn out okay. So in this period, we start to be much more careful with them. It does, because we're starting to see that startle response, we do start to see avoidance paired with emotional changes. So things like your heart rate going up, pupils dilating, fearful posture, and we see fear-based emotional learning. And there peaks or becomes actually even more strong within a period of about 8 to 10 weeks of age. And so that's a period where they are more likely to take a slightly off experience and go, yeah, that was bad. So don't drop your puppy on your head during that period, right? That's a really important period. And unfortunately, that's also when we get puppies. So we're taking them at this super duper sensitive time, and then we're hoping that it all goes okay. That window of sort of golden opportunity of this is how the world works, and I will plop everything I experience into these sort of categories along a spectrum, and similar experiences will be treated that way for the rest of my life, that ends at about 12 weeks of age. There are some reports in literature of sort of maybe that extends. So it's probably not a door that closes. It's probably a process that starts to end. This is also when they start building really strong social relationships with people. There's some literature suggesting that that peaks during 6 to 8 weeks. So maybe another reason to get a puppy at that age. But it's a very, very important period in terms of behavior. That's followed by the juvenile period, which is the sort of 3 to 6 or 7 months of age. This is where they go through rapid growth and you're like, oh my God, you're a different size than when I saw you yesterday. What are you doing? They start to become more independent. So it's not unusual to see a puppy in the 12-week-old period that just stays right by its mom. And you think, I have such a well-behaved puppy. It never wanders off and gets into trouble. And then, you know, 3.5 months rolls around and puppy's like, ooh, what's that over there? I can put that in my mouth.
People are so disappointed when that happens. It's totally normal. It's totally normal. It's like, you know, growing up.
Yeah, like that 12-year-old girl who suddenly doesn't have to come home and tell you all about their day anymore and is telling their friends instead. And you're like, oh, I'm not important. But it's a normal part of development. And then that's followed by sexual maturity, which starts at about 6 to 7 months of age. There's a little bit of breed and size variation on that. And that does happen in the pets that are neutered. So this is a developmental period that is influenced by sexual hormones. So if they are intact, you'll start to see sexual behaviors, but it is not wholly dependent on them. Just like adolescents, you can have adolescence without gender-specific hormones.
Yeah, but it's not nearly as much fun. I don't remember adolescence being all that much fun, but I gotta figure if you have to go through it, you might as well get the hormones too. So
yes. So and that starts adolescence is between sexual and social maturity, and then social maturity is reached depending on size and longevity of the dog between 1.5 and 4 years of age. But for your average size dog, you're looking at about ages 3 to 4.
Okay.
And that is sort of that end of that adolescent period, that social maturity period. That's sort of like meeting a 35-year-old adult human, right? Like you're not quite Play-Doh in your teenager years, but you're still getting there, right? You meet a 13-year-old, you're not really sure what kind of 30-year-old you're going to meet. You meet a 31-year-old, you're pretty sure what kind of 35-year-old you're going to meet. You meet a 35-year-old, you're pretty sure you know what kind of 40-year-old you're going to meet, at least in the human analog for that.
Right.
There is a period in that adolescence period where teething happens. So they have to lose all those deciduous teeth and replace them with adult teeth. And so you can see a peak of some oral behaviors associated with that. But it tends to be texture specific and it's brief. It doesn't go on for forever. And it's not dependent
on it.
It does feel like it.
It feels like it goes on forever. there's hope for anyone with a teething puppy right now. And then there can be a second fear period where, again, they're more likely to take a single situation and say, you know what? Those situations and situations like them, I'm not actually okay with them anymore. And they can be subtle. We don't always actually identify them. And it happens sometime between about 4 and 11 months of age, which is great for trying to decide how to make sure you don't do something wrong. And it's like, oh, good, a moving target that I can't see.
Yes, that is hard because if you're trying really hard to get your dog to be comfortable with a wide variety of things and you've got a time period like this week, I am really nervous about stuff. That can be really hard because it can have some serious ramifications. I think about it can be serious, but can have not so serious too. I just think about our dog Hudson when he was about 5 months of age, maybe somewhere in there. A baby gate fell over behind him, didn't touch him, you know, didn't hit him or anything, but it clambered to the floor, startled the bejeebers out of him. Until the day that dog died, you know, and it didn't matter how much cheese we paired with this gate or, it was my daughter's, Emma's dog, and we would pair Emma and cheese with the gate. To the day he died, Hudson was like, you know, gates, they attack retrievers. They just do. And, you know, if I put a gate up in the hallway, it was great because I was like, okay, I'll just stay here in the kitchen. I don't need to go anywhere near the gate. But it was that single event learning that happened, I think, during a really delicate time period for him. If it happened, you know, maybe a month later or, you know, a month earlier, might not have had the same effect. It just happened to happen right when he was really vulnerable to that particular sound. Yeah, particular event.
Yeah. And we can also see that with socially negative interactions. You can take a puppy who was doing great. They were on the socialization train. They had all the right social experiences with other dogs and other puppies and maybe even an older playmate. And then one day they're, you know, attacked or bowled over by another dog. And maybe it's a specific size, shape dog. And initially, they often look like they're okay, but then about a week, 2 weeks later, they're like, you know what? Similarly sized, shaped dogs, they're scary. They just attack puppies out of nowhere. You don't even know it's coming. And that can, if we're not careful, also expand to other dogs of other sizes and shapes. And it's that single event learning that goes, nope, that is scary. You need to pay attention to that. That's something to worry about. So that's a really challenging period to worry about, to try to find and to try and manage. Sometimes we'll actually be able to recognize them, but certainly if you're also adopting a puppy from a shelter and you don't know anything about them, how do you know whether or not you got them in their fear period? You have no idea. So it's really, really challenging.
That's right. And then if they're in their fear period and then you are now adopting them, so you're adding to their stress, a brand new environment, brand new people, brand new experiences, that can be really hard for dogs who are in a fear period when they're being adopted.
I can.
So what do we do to make that go well for all of our people who are now panicking that they're screwing up their dogs?
Oh, it's like when we show signs of stress. Oh my God, I see them all the time. If you have background information on the dog, right, you've had the puppy since, you know, it was younger and suddenly it's showing signs of fear that it didn't before. And, you know, that you say, ooh, that's new. You used to go up to other dogs or you used to ignore the sound of the dishwasher or those sorts of things, then you can say, aha, okay, we might be in that period, and you can work extra diligently pairing those sorts of concerning things or anything that maybe you might be related to the first time you notice it, whether that's if it's the dishwasher, then maybe it sounds. You say, oh, nope, all loud, strange sounds. Those go back to meaning chicken, just like in their early periods. So if you have that information, then you might know and you might be sort of fortified to do it. If you don't, then say anytime a dog that's that age is fearful, we want to try and help them recover. And then you want to say, okay, this happened and I recognize that fear response, whether it was a startle or a yip or a yelp or it's a, oh my gosh, suddenly I won't go near. Sewer grates is one that I see a lot of dogs with and they just won't walk near them. And you say, okay, let's get some help. Let's help this young, you know, adolescent dogs say those aren't the end of the world so that we don't see that escalate or become more pervasive.
So what if it happens to be, it's great. If you know specifically what it is, you can really either work to avoid that kind of thing or when you do encounter it to give, a lot of reinforcement. And objects, I think, are in some ways a little bit easier. But if it's suddenly I've developed a fear of other dogs, so would you suggest somebody do something like If I know that if my puppy sees a dog at 15 feet, he's going to start to get nervous. Are you going to start pairing chicken with the sight of a puppy, say, at 25 feet? So you're working with the dog before he gets into his panic mode?
So, yeah, you always want to start before the panic mode. And that's something where having someone whose whole job is to stand outside of the mechanics, right? You're busy pairing that sight with chicken and managing the dog. And so having a professional who's working on that with you can be super helpful. Because you want to start back at the level that they're not afraid, because you want to say, oh, well, if it's a neutral at this distance, but they're amazing at this distance. You just didn't know it yet. And then work from that emotional framework to tolerable, and then they could be amazing.
What you're saying is that the thrust of all this is if your dog is showing fear of something and you're uncertain how to handle it, get yourself a good positive reinforcement trainer who can work with you at appropriate distances to teach you how to reward your dog with tasty things, so the dog begins to pair the presence of whatever it is that's scaring it with the presence of something that it really enjoys. And that it's really hard to be both scared and loving liver. So hopefully
it's actually physiologically impossible, which is so nice. It makes my job and your job actually possible, that reward and fear are actually mutually exclusive. Thrill-seeking humans aside, but we don't have documentation of dogs doing that. They don't go on roller coasters. So yes, so it's a really nice reality of physiology. It's very nice to make one thing simple for us.
So when we're talking about all this early socialization, many people are told that they have to worry about some diseases and that they shouldn't take their dog anywhere and they shouldn't be out and about socializing their dog for fear of disease. What are your thoughts on that?
Oh, that's great. So the good news is that a bunch of really, really, really intelligent, highly read people got together and made a position statement on this. So we don't just have to take my word for it. The American Veterinary Society of Animal Behavior, and some people have actually done some research on this. And we know that the risk of a behavior outcome probably is actually more detrimental than the risk of the two main diseases that we're worried about. So distemper and parvo. And not to say that distemper or parvo are not terrible diseases. I mean, I spent 4 years trying to make sure I never had to treat them by preventing the crap out of them. Mm-hmm. But the risk in terms of long-term for the puppy itself, it's probably worse for a behavior problem. That's more likely to end up being the reason for euthanasia in a dog younger than 2 or 3 than parvo or distemper is. What we also know, because somebody bothered to do the study, which is amazing, is that if you look at when they looked at puppies who did attend puppy classes versus comparing them to puppies that didn't, just inside a clinic, so that was their recruitment pool, is that none of the puppies that attended puppy class actually got parvovirus. So they didn't have a higher risk of doing those things. Now that's a controlled type of socialization. So the position statement and the what I always recommend to people is that we do have to socialize these puppies, but we need to make wise choices about how and where we socialize these puppies. So you want to stay away from things that put your puppy at risk. Dirt, though otherwise a phenomenal thing for other dogs and for getting under your fingernails and playing in the garden, is actually not your puppy's friend when it comes to parvovirus. Parvovirus lives in the dirt for years. So parks, dog parks, places that you don't know what the history of that dirt is, it's not a good place to take your unvaccinated puppy. That's a high risk place. And unfortunately, dogs who've survived parvo, because a lot of them can these days because our treatment gets better and better every year with more science, they can shed parvovirus for weeks afterwards, usually 2, wow, 3, maybe 4. So that puppy who just recovered and is like, ooh, I feel great and I'm going to go to the park and spread parvovirus everywhere. So that's a definite risk. Concrete also, it's porous. You can't really clean it. So concrete is something that you want to be careful about. Doesn't mean you feel like you can't let your puppy touch concrete. It's just, maybe don't let them spend hours and hours and hours on concrete that you don't have any idea where it's been.
Mm-hmm. That's right.
Also, that's probably a good idea anyway, parvovirus aside. We also want to make sure that what we're exposing them to from the other contagious standpoint is something that we at least have some control over. So right now in Columbus, there's been canine influenza going around.
Right.
And while most of that has been inside boarding facilities with closed air spaces, it's certainly contagious enough to pick it up at the dog park. So that's not a good place to take your puppy from that side either. And you know, canine influenza tends to pop up in pockets, and it wasn't included in that study, and it didn't occur, but I wouldn't say that that's something that we could just throw out the window as not being a risk just because it wasn't included in that study. So those are things that we wouldn't want to do.
My understanding on canine influenza, somebody told me that, for example, if you're around a dog and who is a carrier who's had it and they like sneeze on your pants, or it can live on your pants for up to 24 to 48 hours.
Yes, it can. It is. It has seems to be very resilient, just like flu in the humans compared to some of the other diseases. And so people who are working with dogs who either potentially or possibly have canine influenza tend to do things like change in the garage and, you know, spray down their scrubs before they walk home and their shoes. And we use isolation protocols if we have suspicion of that here at The Ohio State University. So it's something to be cognizant of. And unlike kind of basic flu where you're aching, you don't feel very good, a lot of those dogs actually get pneumonia. So that's certainly something that we don't want to put a puppy through. So that's not a good option.
So if we're ruling out concrete and dirt and dog parks, where would you suggest I take my brand new puppy so that it can have some socialization experiences?
Great question. Well, one of the best places to get a puppy socialization is through a puppy socialization class or a puppy kindergarten class. And you want it to be in an environment that is regularly disinfected and appropriately disinfected before the class, during the class, because accidents happen, and after the class. So you want it to either have a removable, washable floor like those puzzle pieces, or being a floor that you can spray down and wipe up. Tile and linoleum here. You want that type of cleanable floor. You also want it to be with age similar puppies. So taking your 8-week old puppy to a class that also contains a 9-month old dog, puppy, teenager, it's not going to give it the same benefit of sort of protectiveness, because that 9-month old dog is sort of not in the same social and germ bubble that another 8-week old puppy is. So you want it to be age specific. You also want them to require some form of documentation about prevention of diseases. I don't really like getting parasites, so I would prefer that they require their first round of vaccines, as well as proof of at least one round of roundworms and hookworms, because those are contagious between puppies and humans. So those are fun. Then we want them to have their first vaccine about a week before their actual puppy class. So it's not give them their vaccine today, take them to class tonight. That doesn't provide them actually any coverage. So we make those very, very careful choices about how we socialize them. And then the class also needs to contain actual interaction with dogs and people versus just the puppy's there with you and you're practicing sit down, stay, come, go to your mat. That's great for teaching obedience, and those skills are important and they help us be able to have relationships with our dog that work in a human world, but they don't teach that puppy that people wearing ball caps are safe and people wearing sunglasses are safe and small children are safe and other dogs can be fun. And they don't teach them any of those things. They don't teach them how to play with other puppies and dogs. So those are those are things that you need your class to have. And so most of those are called puppy socialization classes rather than things like basic obedience one. And those are the things you want to look for. And you want to make sure that it's monitored and there's positive reinforcement going on there too, because if you're simply just exposing the puppy, especially if your puppy is maybe anxious or more fearful or is not having the time of their life, then we're not teaching them that the world is full of fun, safe, exciting things that we should approach with glee and have a good time with. We're teaching them that the world is full of things they can't predict that are kind of creepy, and that's not a good way for them to decide that that's how the universe works. That's going to predispose them to problems later.
Well, those are great suggestions.
I was just going to say it's a pretty good overview of puppy stages and puppy development and what we should be doing, which is encouraging.
Very much so. Very much so. Is there anything else that you would, if you had to give one or two other pieces of advice to new puppy owners, what would that be, Dr. Lilly?
I mean, besides puppy socialization class, man, I don't know. That's a good one. Because I think it's one of the most important things that we can do for them in terms of keeping them in their homes and keeping them happy and well adjusted. I would say one thing that if we're, you know, on the topic of socialization is as they're becoming more vaccinated or in puppy socialization classes, seek out and find socially appropriate, no history of aggression with other dogs, no history of aggression with puppies, adult dogs for your puppy to interact with. If you're working with a trainer, ask them, hey, do you have a helper dog who'd be good for this puppy? Or do you know someone who would have a helper dog who'd be good for this puppy? Because trying to learn all of your puppy social skills from your age-appropriate playmates is a little bit like us trying to learn all of our morals and ethics in kindergarten, but the teacher's on vacation. It doesn't sound like a very good idea.
Well, those are great tips.
Wonderful tips. Thank you so much, Dr. Lilly, for joining us here on Your Family Dog, and good luck with your. We have shared a couple of clients, so I'm sure that I will see you again sometime in the next year before you move on to bigger and better things. But thank you very much. It's always helpful to have somebody on who reiterates exactly what Colleen and I are saying and has her credentials behind her name to bolster her.
I only have one set of credentials, working on that second set. So,
well, good luck with it.
Thank you guys very much.
All right. Thanks
for coming on.
All right. Bye-bye.
Thanks for listening to Your Family Dog. Got questions? Interesting ideas? Colleen and Julie would love to hear them. Call 614-349-1661 or visit www.yourfamilydogpodcast.com to share your thoughts.